25 years ago this week, this very week, friends, a miracle took place at Knock in County Mayo in Ireland. And we are indeed delighted and honored to welcome Marion Carroll. And Marion, first of all, you're very welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Adrian.
I want to acknowledge up front that we got to know about you and indeed have spoken with you in the past on this program here through Ed O'Brien, the Beholder Man, who indeed has devoted a great amount of time in his lifetime to publicizing the Knock Knock Shrine. And he is, of course, has done tremendous work with his wife, Teresa, as he heads Friends of Knock in the United States. But let me, first of all, tell you or ask you about the diagnosis back in 1978 of your affliction in multiple sclerosis. How did that, what were you feeling at that time? Can you bring us to that time when you were told?
I can, Adrian, because in my time, it's only as it progressed that it could really be diagnosed, where now there's a MRI scan. And that's great for people now, because our daughter, Cora, has multiple sclerosis. And it was so easier for her than myself, because I was been pushed around for years, not knowing what was wrong, and I was being ignored, and I was told to pull myself together and suggest a psychiatrist and a whole lot. But finally, in 1978, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. I didn't know what it was, but it was such a relief to have something.
Right.
And it didn't really hit me when I was diagnosed. It wasn't until I came back from Dublin to the Midlands where I live, and family and friends started coming, and some of them were crying, and some of them were feeling very sorry for me, and I thought to myself, I must have only a couple of weeks to live. So I actually sent down to the library for a book on multiple sclerosis, the worst book you could read when you're newly diagnosed, and that hit me what was wrong. But I was very lucky, because my husband, Jimmy, just after that time, one day he was home from work, there was only two of us, and he went out and he made two mugs of coffee. But when he came in, he left my coffee on the coffee table and started to drink his own, instead of putting the towel one side, because I dribbled, and the coffee cup in a good hand, because it was as if I was paralyzed, if I had a stroke all one side, that's what it was like. And I said to him, Jimmy, you never handed me the coffee. He said, no, Mar. If you think I'm going to be your servant for the rest of our life, you've another thing coming. Of course, Adrian, I got mad, and I decided I didn't want, because I was like this. And after that day, I started doing things to myself again. But it was actually the year after when I learned to cope with the illness. And one day we're talking about the year gone by. And of course, I brought up the subject of the coffee and how cruel he was. And they said, no, Mar, I was not cruel. But I knew it, if I maddened you enough, there's no keeping you down. So he knew me better than I knew myself.
From the time of your diagnosis and in the years that were to follow, was it a slow progress as your multiple sclerosis, as it was kicking in? Was it very noticeable? Did it come in spurts? What was it like?
It was very hard, because, you know, people have this funny idea that if you're not on a stick or crutches or in a wheelchair, there's nothing wrong. And a lot of it, my power came back on the right-hand side for a while. I got remission, but the fatigue is unbelievable. And then I had constant kidney infections. And sometimes, you know, I could have a week and my hand wouldn't be great or my leg wouldn't be great. And I suffered terribly from bad headaches, because I didn't realize with the sight. I thought it was headaches, that was the sight that was actually when it was going blur.
Oh boy.
And there was a lot of different things happening. But then when you've got two young children, and Jimmy was in the Irish Army and he was away on border duty and different things, I really had to cope. I had to sort of push it aside in a sense as best as I could. Until, you know, it got to the stage that I couldn't. In 1983, we lived in Offaly at that time, and in 1983, Jimmy brought me back to Athlone, where I came from. And I was after I had a hysterectomy. And you see, there's a few things that aggravated my illness. I had cesarean sections for my children. I had a hysterectomy, and before that I had womb repairs. And they all aggravate the MS. That in 85, I started going downhill slowly, but I wasn't worried about it. But in early 87, I lost the power on both of my legs. After that, I had to get the catheter in, because I had no control over my bladder, and my kidneys were giving trouble. After that, I lost complete power in the right arm and hand, and I only had limited power in the left. I was completely blind in the right eye, and very little sight in the left eye. My speech was badly affected. The muscles in my throat were affected. To eat, the food had to be cut up very small or liquidized, and to drink was a plastic beaker with a lid and a straw, and all that had to be given to me. And I had to wear a collar to support my neck and head. And eventually I had to wear a padding because I had no control over my bowels. And I was really just like a baby in a pram. I had to be washed, fed, changed, and moved. And I also had epilepsy.
Oh, boy.
And that was the condition I was in 89.
What, before you got to Knock, or was, what part did religion play in for you during that period of time?
Well, I always liked praying. It was something I always liked praying, and I joined the Legion of Mary after I met my confirmation. And the reason I joined the Legion of Mary was to go and be able to clean the church and to get inside the altar rails. I used to think that if I could touch the altar rails during the consecration of Mass, I'd get electric shock. And I thought it was the nearest place you could get to Jesus. But I was never overboard, you know, and I still am not. But I like praying, and I always loved my faith.
Did you get discouraged since obviously you were good at the praying? Did you get discouraged and wonder why, because of the power of prayer or whatever, were you vexed at any point with respect to saying, you know, for somebody who is and devoting a lot of your life to prayer and to the church, that you're getting a bum rap here?
No, because every day I thank the Lord. You know, I had everything everybody else wanted. I had a wonderful husband and two beautiful children. So I had what everybody else was looking for. There was people out there that could walk and they had no illness, but they were unhappy or they were greedy or full of resentment. And to me, they were the ones that were sick. For I had everything you could want, because when you've got love, Adrian, you've got everything in the world. And when you can feel that love and know you're wanted, that's everything. So I was never really, I just thanked them for the gifts I had.
How often did you go to Knock before 25 years ago this week when the miracle occurred? How had you gone to Knock fairly regularly?
I had TB as a child. And as you know, when you're TB, no one bothered with you because I TB at the lung. But neighbours of my parents brought me to Knock one Sunday. And I don't remember much about the church, but I definitely remember the shops and the cobbled streets, and I made the tea down at the graveyard for the picnic. Jimmy and I went
and the famous or infamous stalls.
I actually remember I had 2 shillings left, and I wanted to buy a motor sprayer for my father, and it was 2 and 6, and I remember the lady that brought me down saying, "The child is after giving you all her money. Can you not give it to her for the 2 shillings? But I remember those. But in 1978, after I was diagnosed, Jimmy and I went down one Tuesday. It was lashing rain and there was a gale blowing. And Knock Shrine was completely deserted. And when I looked at it, I thought to myself, this has to be the most miserable place on earth. And I got into the car, went home, with a solemn promise I wouldn't be caught there again. How wrong I was. But, and then the third time was when I went and I was cured.
Tell us about, first of all, your physical condition. How did you get to Knock? And
I used to go into Sloan Hospital for respite, and there was a friend of mine, Jerry Blinn. I knew Jerry growing up. Jerry was in the Order of Malta, and he was an ambulance driver at Sloan Hospital. And just one day he called up to see me and asked, would I like to go to Knock for a day? And I just said I'd go anywhere to get away from the four walls, and it was planned. And our day off some pilgrimage is the 3rd of September.
Mm-hmm.
Now, tomorrow, please God, it'll be our day off some pilgrimage in Knock. And I went down in the Order of Malta ambulance with Jerry and Anne Flanagan, the nurse, for that Sunday. They called for me around 9:30, and Jimmy helped them. They strapped me into the stretcher, and they brought me to Knock. And when they brought me to Knock, of course, they brought me into St. John's, the resting care for the sick. And they brought me into the nurse, and she emptied the urinary bag and changed my diaper and done what was needed to be done before I went over to the Basilica.
Were there a lot of disabled and at that particular gathering?
I don't particularly remember that because, you see, I didn't realise, but with the multiple sclerosis, there was times I wouldn't take in things and I'd forget things. Like if you had called to see me and Jimmy had asked me, did Adrian come and see you? And I said, I hadn't seen him in years. And he could be passing Jimmy, going out the front door. I wasn't able to hold things. And yet,
yes.
When I was cured, it was like it was never that way.
How, bring us to, say, a few minutes before you felt what you've referred to as a whispering breeze. What were you alert? I know you've said that, you know, there was probably confusion and the illness plus all of the side effects obviously were that's unbearable to think about, much less go through.
Mm-hmm.
But did you feel, at what point did you feel that something was happening? And were you in the midst of prayer? Was the prayer directed towards your being, you know, needing to somehow feel better than you were?
No, Edwin, that day, you see, I always had my own altar at home, and I wanted so much to go into our own church in Athlone. But when Jimmy brought me in a couple of months before that, it wasn't accessible for wheelchairs. So actually, when they brought the stretcher into the Basilica, put the stretcher right in front of Our Lady of Knock, and I realised this is where I wanted to be. And I'd been thinking a lot about Diane and Jimmy, Cor and Anthony.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I wanted another woman to talk to that would understand the pain within. And I looked back up at the statue of Our Lady, and I said to her, well, you're a mother too. You know how I feel. When the ceremony started, my bishop at the time, Bishop Colum O'Reilly, he anointed me for the anointing of the sick. Now, after the anointing, I got sick. After the anointing of the sick, I got restless. But now I realized that my brain was coming back to function. And the consecration of Mass, at that time, I wasn't afraid, but all of a sudden I wanted someone I knew. And Sister Antonio was a Eucharistic minister in our parish, and she brought me Holy Communion every Sunday of my illness. And I knew she was there that day, so I got one of the stewards that knew her to secretly find her. When he could not find her, I was glad, because I did not know what I wanted of her. But I received Holy Communion from my bishop. And after I received Holy Communion, I got a very bad pain in both of my heels, which is very unusual. Now, I was due to get all my drugs, my painkillers, mm-hmm. but because I drank the beaker and the lid and the straw, I didn't want to cause any trouble in there, so I decided to wait till Mass was over. And it came then to the blessing of the sick with the Blessed Eucharist and the monstrance. And when they were going round, and my bishop came in front of the stretcher with the monstrance to bless me. like a whispery breeze telling me that if the stretcher was opened, that I could get up and walk. But from very down to earth in practice, I thought she'd have more sense and getting ideas like this.
Mm.
So I'd wait till I go home and tell Jimmy he'd definitely think I'm gone nuts. And I wasn't going to tell anybody, Adrian, but as it was, they brought the stretcher back over to St. John's. And the doctors with the pilgrimage that day, he wasn't my doctor, but I knew them. And his wife came over talking to me. And we're talking for a little while, and I had no control over what happened next. I said, would you think I was stupid? That if the stretcher was open, that I could get up and walk. And she said no, but I knew by her face she didn't know what to say. She knew me all my life and knew the condition I was in. So she actually called one of the nurses that nursed me in that lone hospital, Maureen Rafferty, and Maureen Rafferty opened the stretcher. But as she came to our home the next day, and she told me she only opened it to pacify me, but when she opened the stretcher, my two legs swung out and I stood up straight. I wasn't even a bit stiff after all them years.
Were you scared? Were you frightened? Were you scared? Were you what was the feeling?
No, it wasn't that's the beauty of it. I was so at peace. It was Sister Antonia knows I was holding my head myself without the collar, and that I could use my arms and hands, and that my speech was perfect. But Adrian, when I stood up in Knock that day, right in front of me, I see my own heart, and I was so full of joy and peace and a love there is no end to. And it was so shiny that I could come directly into the sun, and the rays of that came towards me, and I got all them gifts of that joy, that peace, and that great love.
What was the reaction? Yeah, what was the reaction of your kids?
I think Jimmy's will always stay in my mind, because when we were coming home, I sat up straight the whole way home in the ambulance. I didn't even want to relax. And coming down there, our driving alone, I said to the Aunt Fanny and the nurse with the order of mortar, I said, round the collar, we'll send nothing to Jimmy, we'll surprise him. But I forgot I was sitting and I was lying in the stretcher. So Jerry back into the drive and got out to open the back of the ambulance. And Jimmy came out the front door, and I heard him say to Jerry, I suppose I better get the wheelchair. Jerry said, well, I suppose you're better. And the boy said, I wasn't too sure what was happening. I was walking down the steps of the ambulance. Jerry was one side and Anne was the other. And Jimmy came out the front door with the wheelchair. He said, well, Mar, how was Knock? I said, it was all right, Jim. Why would anybody bother going down there? He didn't realize I was walking. So I'd done the only thing I knew what to do. I got into the wheelchair. And with that, Jerry and Anne went off in the ambulance. And as I said, Adrian, I don't think I'll ever forget the next part as long as I live. When we did to our sitting room, Jimmy sat down over the patio door. And the wheelchair was in the centre of the room. And I stood up and said, look, Jim, I can walk. He said, oh, God, Mar. He said, don't. And I went over and put my arms around him. I'd never seen a man crying like him. And he got down on his knees and he started to thank the Lord. Of course, Cora came in and Jimmy said, Mammy can walk. And my greatest time that day was not standing up and Knock. It was actually getting up, going over and putting my arms around my child to let my child feel my love for her and not try and tell her. For 3 years I didn't have the voice of the arm to let my children know or feel my love. And of course, Anthony came running in the front door and Jimmy and Cora said, Mammy can walk. And he said, oh yeah. I went out the door as quick as he came in. It wasn't until he actually told his friends that I realized what had happened. But I didn't understand Jimmy's tears that day. It wasn't a couple of weeks after we sat down as a family and spoke about the things you don't like to speak about. Fear, uncertainty and death. And I learnt a lot. I learnt there were times after Jimmy washed, said, changed or moved me. And he left our bedroom. He got down on his knees and he asked the Lord to take him and to cure me. Or the Christmas before I was cured, the treatment planned to be the best because it was going to be the last together.
It's 25 years. Are there times when you feel that perhaps, you know, the miracle has occurred, you're there, but maybe this is for a time? Are you discouraged at times? Do you feel that those who are around you are saying, I hope to God that she's, you know, that this wasn't just a temporary situation. Miracles are, at the best of times, very hard to understand, and you know, it's not something you lived a miracle, and
yes,
you're one of the few people who have lived a miracle. Do you have any fears, you know, or have you had over now 25 years that as you got, as you were cured, as the miracle, you know, took place, it could one day just reverse again? And if so, is that something that you would accept, or?
Well, I would accept if it happened, but I know it won't. You see, Adrian, like for instance, I travel the world where I'm invited to speak in churches and schools and seminarians,
yeah.
And I pray with people. And as I do to explain to people, no one can tell you you're healed, only Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And he will tell you within, through the Holy Spirit. And you will have the strength and the courage to know, you will know that this is it. This has actually happened. Not because someone told you, because Jesus told you himself within your own heart. And I know I'll never get my MS back. The saddest time was when our daughter was diagnosed. I knew at 19 she had multiple sclerosis. And my doctor used to say to me, oh, don't do that to yourself. But eventually he sent her for the MRIs, the scans, and she had the plaque in the brain. And she has three beautiful children.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the eldest girl is starting college next week. And she's accepted her multiple sclerosis. She's on the beta-feron. A lot of it now is fatigue and sometimes some kidney trouble and leg trouble. But thanks be to God that, you know, she's doing good. But that was the hardest thing that happened to me. Because, you know, every mother would sooner have it herself than her child.
Yeah. 25 years, again, it probably would have been relatively easy for you to stay at home, to spend your time in prayer. In traveling the world, you actually get to do something which I know, and particularly from those who know you very well, say that you could never be expected to travel so much, to utilize so much energy if you were not you know, afflicted with MS in the first place. That must feel to you to be you're in a great position. You have utilized the miracle to bring hope to many, many people. And as you continue, we want to wish you luck. Our time is almost up here, but I would like to also let you tell us about Mary Henry, who is wife of Noel Henry, and who has been instrumental in getting you to throughout the United States, or particularly the East Coast here. What's her organization?
Mary works for Marian Pilgrimages, but they're both in Ireland and America, and they bring pilgrims all over the world.
Yeah.
Actually, there's a group I coming over in May from both Canada and America on the 13th of May, and I'm bringing them to Fatima and Knock.
Terrific.
And
we have to leave it at that because our time is up. Thank you. And again, God bless. And remember us all. You have a contact and a good one there. Thank you.
Right. God bless.
Friends, Irish Radio Network USA, The Flannelly Show. Hope you enjoyed the program. God bless. Bye.